Listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820, brings you St. Gabriel's Trumpet, a Catholic news weekly produced by AM 820 to keep you informed and up to date about what's happening in our listening area. And now, St. Gabriel's Trumpet with host Chip Stalter.
Good afternoon and welcome to St. Gabriel's Trumpet on today, the feast day of St. Dunstan. He was born of a noble family near Glastonbury, England, educated by Irish monks, and became a monk himself. After a time as abbot at Glastonbury, he became the Archbishop of Canterbury. He was a noted musician, composed several hymns, was a skilled metalworker, and illuminated manuscripts. He is the patron of armorers, goldsmiths, locksmiths, and jewelers. Today on St. Gabriel's Trumpet, we'll learn about the Bishop Watterson High School Business Club and how they're helping the Christine Wilson Burn Center at Nationwide Children's Hospital. We'll also talk to Aaron Cordell from the Diocesan Office of Social Concerns about human trafficking. Kevin Lowry talks to Brian Kroll, a parishioner at Holy Family Church and a recent convert to Catholicism. But first up, an accomplished and superb pianist, John Angotti began studying the piano at age 7. His mother, who has been a church musician for over 50 years, motivated him to become involved with church music at a very early age through the children's choir at church. John believed it was there, at that age, when he truly began to form his beliefs about God through the songs he was singing. John has been writing Catholic Christian music since his mid-teen years at St. Joseph's Seminary, where he was considering entering the priesthood. His music combines old traditional hymns with new stylistic rhythms. John will be performing at a concert on Wednesday, May 21st at 7 p.m. at St. Joan of Arc Church in Powell. Carrie Migalski spoke with John about the inspiration behind his music and what it's like to be an artist for the Catholic music culture.
We're joined here today with John Angotti, a Catholic music artist, who will be visiting us in Columbus this Wednesday, May 21st at 7 p.m. at St. Joan of Arc Church. All are welcome to come hear his inspirational music. And John, tell us a little bit about your background and how your background has driven you in your life to want to play inspirational music for the Catholic culture.
Well, I started playing piano when I was 7 years old. It was a mandatory item from my mother, who was the church organist and a piano teacher. There was four of us, and each of us were four adopted children, by the way, and each of us were mandated to take piano lessons, and we all basically hated it. And it was one of these things where she kind of forced it, you're going to thank me later kind of thing. And she was right. And as I started playing in rock and roll bands when I was about 15-16 years old, and through college I went to West Virginia University and then went on to the Naval School of Music, and I was a lead singer in a Navy rock band. And as I was doing that kind of music, I was still going to church and not really kind of knowing why I was there, and the music was boring and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, so I would volunteer my services for that, and it seemed like, you know, people seemed to get more out of the mass, or, you know, it touched them in a specific way, the music, or the way that I approached the music or the hymns. And so when I started writing for myself out of my own lived experiences of struggle and difficulties and things, that I had somebody one time come to me and say, you know, that song you wrote got me through my chemotherapy, somebody who I didn't even know. And that's when it kind of hit me that, you know, the power that music has, that, you know, I'm just a steward of the gift that's been given. And so therefore, you know, you can sing rock songs and in the club and all that kind of stuff, but when you have music that reaches people and brings them hope and healing, when the questions of why they're going through their difficulties has no answer, and it brings them peace, all of a sudden, you know, that became something to me as it has a purpose, and it caused me to, you know, to continue to write in that vein, so that then the songs can, you know, help others.
I was listening to a lot of the testimonials about you on your website at johnangotti.com, and it was truly amazing to see all of the people on just how your music inspires them. So that's got to be even inspiring for you as you're writing the music.
It is. You know, everybody carries something with them, and when you know, I always ask people to tell me their story, you know, what are their God moments, you know, why do they believe in God in the first place, and you know, the things that people tell me, they end up getting incorporated in the songs somehow, you know, and it's a it's a ministry for me that really makes a difference in the world.
I also read that you at one point said that you truly began to form your beliefs about God through the songs we were singing. And I think that's such an important platform right now, even for our younger generation. So can you just describe for us the type of music that you play and you sing?
Well, I do various types of music. You know, sometimes people refer to me as the Catholic Billy Joel. Mm-hmm. And because some of the music is inspirational, and some of the music is liturgical. And so, you know, the liturgical music that we have is also catechetical in nature. And it helps people, you know, if people read the text before they sang the song, you know, that to recognize the richness of what the text liturgically is, to that, you know, the liturgical music surrounds the action, and it brings that action of at the Mass sometimes to life, because 90% of the people there really don't know what's going on, and they're going through motions because it's been, this is what we do, and, you know, it's not really taught in school, it's not really explained in school. As a matter of fact, you know, going to Mass is a response to faith. I mean, technically, we're supposed to already know what all that means, all those rituals mean, before you enter into them. But because nobody has been predisposed, or who's taken a class or has a master's degree and all that kind of stuff, so therefore the music is also a teaching opportunity to help people and be engaged in the liturgical action, so that the fruits of what that is to give us the grace, you know, all of a sudden becomes real. And so the importance of, you know, now for me, writing liturgical music is completely different than if I'm just writing an inspirational song. Because if I'm writing for liturgy, I have to know what those rituals mean, or else I can't write about which I do not know. You know, I've just finished a master's degree in pastoral studies and theology from Catholic Theological Union in Chicago, because I knew I didn't know enough. And so it was through this whole new understanding of what these rituals are to reveal, I was like, nobody knows this. And if they did, how could they keep themselves from singing? So therefore, writing liturgical music with that understanding is a whole different animal than just writing from an inspiration of all of the way I feel, you know, at a moment. They're two separate animals, and the music that I write reflects that.
That's beautiful. Well, we're very excited to have you coming to visit us in Columbus this Wednesday, May 21st at 7 p.m. at St. Joan of Arc. Can you tell us where we can find more information about you?
You can find more information at johnangotti.com and or Facebook, or wlpmusic.com as well. That's my publisher, World Library Publications. So you can find it at either location.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us on The Trumpet today, John, and we look forward to seeing you on Wednesday.
Thank you. God bless.
God bless.
All are welcome to hear John Angotti on Wednesday, May 21st at 7 p.m. at St. Joan of Arc Church, 10700 Liberty Road in Powell. For more information, go to johnangotti.com. You're listening to St. Gabriel's Trumpet. It's 8 minutes past the hour. Kevin caught up with Brian Kroll in the basement of Holy Family Church to talk to him about his conversion story to Catholicism.
This is Kevin Lowry with St. Gabriel's Trumpet. Today I'm speaking with Brian Kroll. Brian is a new member of Holy Family and just came into the church at Easter. So, Brian, welcome.
Thank you.
So, tell me a little bit about your faith background and you know, how did you grow up?
Well, I grew up in a, I guess you would say, a Reformed evangelical church with very faithful parents in a small Christian school where I was drilled in the scriptures and taught the fear of God, and my parents always had the scriptures on their lips. My mom always had Proverbs and Psalms on her lips, and which I'm very, very thankful for.
That's great. I can, you know, it's funny because I can relate to that. Mm-hmm. As a child going to vacation Bible school and having to memorize all the books of the Bible.
Sure.
And if I did that, then they awarded me a Bible. And I remember my dad, who was the minister of the church, awarding it to me and being somewhat surprised. But
sure,
faithful parents are a great gift. That's wonderful.
It is. It has been a great gift.
So how is it, what got you interested in the Catholic Church?
Well, it's funny. Looking back, it seems inevitable from the very beginning.
Really?
But now, just in the last 9 or 10 years, I suppose, I ran across some Mennonite writers that gave a little bit of historical background from their perspective on the Reformation, uh-huh. On the doctrines of justification. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I had been struggling with my own perspective and the tradition I'd grown up in as far as the Reformed doctrine of justification. Mm-hmm. And how it doesn't seem to add up with what the scriptures have to say.
Right.
Having to do kind of exegetical gymnastics to make everything fit together.
Sure.
So moving on from that, I just ran into more and more areas where the Catholic Church had been right and I had been wrong. From one thing to the next, from contraception, mm-hmm. To the doctrines of justification, to Mary, to the Reformed pillars, the two Reformed pillars, sola fide and sola scriptura, I guess for me, the first thing to fall was sola fide and how it just simply doesn't add up with what the New Testament has to say about how we are justified. Christ himself is very clear that obedience is necessary for justification. And James obviously makes a categorical statement that it's not by faith only, but by works also that we're justified.
Sure. So did you do a lot of reading during this period? I mean, what was it that really kind of piqued your interest?
Well, going from obviously the New Testament itself, which is what I've always been rooted in, but also to the Ante-Nicene Fathers, and seeing that Christ, God the Son, became a man in a certain period of time, in a certain culture.
Sure.
And if we take the New Testament, the letters of Paul, the Gospels themselves, out of the context of first century Judaism, we lose our perspective of the things that Jesus had to say and the things that Paul has to say. So if I'm hearing Romans 3 or Romans 4 or Ephesians 6 or the entire book of Galatians from the perspective of a first century Jewish convert, I'm hearing something entirely different than if I'm hearing it from the perspective of a 20th or 21st century empiricist, I guess you could say.
So that's interesting. I mean, you make some great points. One of the things that I loved coming into the church was just the consistency mm-hmm. that has existed over so much time. So did you run into any Catholics during this time, and what was the impact of that?
Actually, aside from the writers I ran into, the Chestertons and the Joseph Pierce and the R.H. Benson, I went through a period of real frustration with Catholics.
Really?
Sure. And my thought was, boy, if more Catholics were just better Christians, this would be so much easier.
I can assure you, we're all trying.
Sure. And I'm in the same boat. So it's kind of a beam in my own eye type of thing. But I ran into, as I started to attend Mass, obviously I ran into some faithful Catholic families, and I was able to show my wife that, hey, Catholics actually are Christians, and I'm not the only crazy one.
Sure. And a lot of people don't realize that there are people outside the church who don't consider Catholics to be Christian at all.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I grew up in that environment.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a surprise, I know, to some of my cradle Catholic mm-hmm. friends. Well, that's fascinating. Now, in terms of the impact that this has had on your life, I mean, what do you do differently now that you've come into the church as opposed to before?
Well, we've introduced some Catholic rhythms into our home. I've found prayer itself to be much, much easier.
Huh.
It's something I had always struggled with as an evangelical, is every time I sit down to pray, having something new to say to God.
Sure.
But having from the evangelical perspective, the prayer seemed kind of rote. But rote's taken on, the word rote itself has taken on a negative connotation that it never should have had.
Sure.
You know, routine is a good thing. God prescribes in the Old Testament, he prescribed a very rote system of worship.
Right. And maybe one of the best examples of that is the Holy Rosary, which is one of my favorite prayers.
Sure.
Well, Brian, thank you so much for being with us today. This is Kevin Lowry from St. Gabriel's Trumpet.
Okay, Sue, you're up.
The feast day of Our Lady of Consolation will be celebrated at the Basilica National Shrine of Our Lady of Consolation in Cary on the weekend of May 24th and 25th. On Saturday, Father Charles Ritter, administrator of the Diocese of Toledo, will celebrate the 5:30 p.m. Mass and entrust the Diocese of Toledo to the care of Our Lady of Consolation. On Sunday, the noon Mass will be celebrated in English and Italian by Father David Ross, pastor of St. Rose and St. John parishes in Lima. For more information, visit olcshrine.com. On Sunday, May 25th, two new diocesan priests, Deacon Cyrus Haddad and Vincent Nguyen, will be ordained by Bishop Campbell at St. Joseph's Cathedral, 212 East Broad Street. The ordination takes place at 10 a.m. Call 614-224-5191 for more information. Mary, Star of Evangelization, pray for us.
Human trafficking is a horrific crime against the fundamental rights and dignity of the human person. The United Nations Protocol on Human Trafficking defines it as the recruitment, transportation, harboring, or receipt of persons by means of force, fraud, or coercion. 26% of total victims are under 18 years old, representing 5.5 million child victims worldwide. The issue of human trafficking is real and grave internationally, nationally, and right here in Central Ohio. The USCCB has issued statements from our bishops that the Catholic Church has condemned human trafficking and has developed social service programs to protect its survivors. Further responding to this, the Columbus Diocesan Office of Social Concerns has responded to the issue by helping to promote awareness through educational programs and supporting the state-level Human Trafficking Commission. Correspondent Carrie Migalski discussed the issue and the diocesan response with Aaron Cordell, Director for the Catholic Campaign for Human Development and Catholic Relief Services.
I'm joined here today with Aaron Cordell, who is with the Diocesan Office of Social Concerns with the Diocese of Columbus, the Diocesan Catholic Campaign for Human Development and Catholic Relief Services. She's the director. Thank you for joining us, Aaron.
Thank you very much for having me.
We're talking today about a very, very serious issue we have here, even in Central Ohio and the state of Ohio, that we really want to bring an awareness to. It's the issue of human trafficking. Aaron, tell us a little bit about what is human trafficking and what are the concerns that we have here?
Well, primarily, human trafficking encompasses the illegal trade of human beings for commercial sex exploitation or forced labor. And we have both of those situations going on in Ohio. We define the crime of trafficking as when you are forced or through fraud or coercion into providing either sex or labor for someone. And luckily now in the state of Ohio, children under the age of 18 no longer have to prove that they were coerced. We changed the laws a few years ago that said anyone under the age of 18 automatically is considered a victim. And that was a huge step because before that, if you were 16 or 17, you could be put in jail for being forced to be out on the streets making a living.
And this is a real issue that we're seeing for children under the age of 18.
It is. It's a huge problem. And unfortunately, there aren't enough resources around yet because we're really at the infancy of addressing this issue. And there aren't enough resources around for children to get the supportive services they need. We do have a facility called Grace Haven, and it's wonderful, but they're very limited. I mean, they have maybe a dozen beds. And we figure there are about 1,500 children being trafficked in Ohio at any given time during the year.
Well, how do you see the state of Ohio responding to this issue?
I think we're right now in the forefront of setting the benchmark for other states. Our state attorney general, Mike DeWine, has developed a commission, and that commission works on a variety of subcommittees, and they're doing some amazing work. They're really changing the culture in Ohio when it comes to first identifying that there is trafficking here and then also responding to it and providing resources from education clear up to law enforcement officers. And we've just seen a huge impact in the last few years from the work of that commission. And certainly the work of Representative Fetter, who is really the champion in our state house on this issue.
And how do you see the diocese supporting this response? What have you done personally? Have you seen increased awareness in our schools?
An increased awareness in the schools, and a huge increase awareness in people wanting us to come and provide presentations to just build the education base, to build the foundation. And of course, we jump on this with both feet because it at the very depth of this issue is the lack of human dignity that's been taken away from these victims. And if we don't maintain our respect for life at all ages and all stages, we lose so much. And so it's just another opportunity to look at where are people not being treated with respect and dignity, and how can we impact that? And first and foremost, it starts with education, just being aware of the issue. And then we have some opportunities around through the Columbus Coalition of Rescue and Restore that works out of the Salvation Army building, and some other programs around the diocese that really do support and provide the everyday necessities for people who are being trafficked.
So where can someone get more information as far as educating themselves on this issue and then maybe some help? Can they contact you at the diocese?
Absolutely. Our office can always be contacted. I can be contacted. We'll put up my information to anybody that wants it. There are great places to look at to find out what the church has to say about this. Certainly in the state of Ohio, the Catholic Conference of Ohio keeps a very good website with current issues and certainly anything that's going on in the state house. And that's a great place to start because they also will connect you back to the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops and the Office on Migration and Refugee Resettlement that has done some amazing work in raising awareness, but also supplying support for people who have been rescued from the trafficking problem.
And you can get more information by going to the Diocese of Columbus website and also the OhioCathConference.org website, and you can look up the human trafficking link to that.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Aaron, for joining us, and we will definitely help support this issue in bringing awareness to our community.
We appreciate it because it's out there. We can't pretend it doesn't exist, and it's time that we all get on board to try to make a difference.
Absolutely.
The Diocesan Office of Social Concerns has many resources on the human trafficking issue. You can visit colsdioc.org for more information. Bishop Watterson High School Business Club has been very instrumental in raising money for local charities in the community. Each year, the club chooses a different charity and organizes a fundraising event for it. On Saturday, June 7th, they will hold a run at Ohio Dominican University, and all proceeds will go to the Christine Wilson Burn Center at Nationwide Children's Hospital. Christine was an alum of Bishop Watterson High School who was killed in a fire in 2003. Carrie met with Sam, a sophomore from Bishop Watterson High School, who is helping to organize the run with the business club.
I'm joined here today with a sophomore at Bishop Watterson High School, and he is also a member of the Watterson Business Club. Thank you for joining us on the trumpet, Sam.
It's an honor to be here.
Sam, recently the business club took on, as you do each year, you take on a different charity to raise funds for, and you took on the charity of the Christine Wilson Burn Center, and you will be conducting a run on June 7th at Ohio Dominican University. Can you tell us a little bit about what this event is and how the business club began to take on different charities?
Well, for me, the most important thing was just I really wanted to get involved in Watterson, and like I felt like I didn't do very much my freshman year, so I was presented with a bunch of things, and the business club was a big one, and I love business and everything, so I decided to join the business club, and I found out that we do various charities and help around the community in certain ways, and this year we adopted the charity of the Christine Wilson Burn Unit at Nationwide Children's Hospital, and we're doing a 5K run June 7th at Ohio Dominican University.
What inspired you to take part in this and organize the event?
Christine was a former Bishop Watterson alum, and she impacted a lot of people in the community. I find inspiration from all that she's done, and she's really helped others And she was a very like kind and loving person from what I hear. And we just wanted to help out with that.
Sam, tell us a little bit about the business club at Bishop Waterson High School. And what are some of the things and the projects that you do?
Well, the business club is great because we really help the community and pretty much the community at large. And some of the things that we do are obviously creating this 5K run, and we're doing we do various bake sales throughout the year and different fundraisers to help our adopted charity, like I said before. And so we have different aspects of the business club where people will be in charge of marketing and they'll have to get the word out because we have a lot of expenses, including like the policemen that we pay for by the hour, the balloon arches, the t-shirts, things like that for this 5K run. And then we have financing and we have the design team for the t-shirts. So it's a lot of that. And we meet early in the morning because the early bird gets the worm. And it's really important for me, at least, because I get to feel like I'm accomplishing something through business club. It's great. I would recommend anybody, if they don't have one at their school, to start one or to even join the Bishop Waterson one.
Is anybody invited to run in this event?
Pretty much anybody and everybody. It's really cool because we have the timing. And the timing is like really legit, and it's all like by the virtual thing. And so you have that little patch on the side of you. And so it's cool because you can either run, walk, or you can actually do it for time. Some people try to like do the absolute best they can on the 5Ks. It's for like personal records and things like that. So those people can come and they have the official time and they can get a great score because people like to better themselves and all that. And you can also do it as a family. You can walk it, you can run it. So things like that, that's what I would say.
If someone wanted to join the run, where can they get more information?
For more information, you can go to Bishop Waterson's website. Just to let you know, the first 100 registrations get a free t-shirt. The location is Ohio Dominican University. Registration starts at 7:30 and the race starts at 8:30. Again, it is June 7th. Be one of the first 100 to register because you get that free t-shirt.
Thank you so much, Sam. You're an awesome student, and this is an awesome cause that your business club has picked up. Thank you for joining us today on The Trumpet.
If you are interested in participating in the run at Ohio Dominican University on June 7th, please visit the Bishop Waterson website for more information. That's it for today's episode of St. Gabriel's Trumpet. We'll be back next Monday at noon with another great episode. If you've got a story idea or something crazy good going on at your parish that you want the world to know about, send us an email at info@stgabrielradio.com. For the St. Gabriel Trumpet team, I'm Chip Stalter. Deus vobiscum.
St. Gabriel's Trumpet is a production of listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820. Archives of St. Gabriel's Trumpet with Chip Stalter and all of our locally produced programs are available at stgabrielradio.com.